Well, please come with me to the reading which we had, Luke chapter 19, verses 1 to 10. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He passes through Jericho for the very last time. Beautiful Jericho, palm trees, rose gardens, leafy streets lined with sycamore trees. There's a winter palace, a wonderful climate, a city that's so romantic that Mark Antony gave it as a gift to Cleopatra. But Jesus hasn't come for a break. He's come looking for someone. Verse 10, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Now, I've preached on this passage before, and I've read this passage many, many times. But reading it the other day, something struck me. It seemed to leap out from the page at me. It's verse 5. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house. Now, the New King James manages to make it sound like something out of Pride and Prejudice, doesn't it? Make haste and come down. What Jesus is saying, he's saying, come on, hurry up, come down. But this is what struck me. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said, Zacchaeus. I love that, Zacchaeus. Jesus called him by his name. Why do you think it was? So what? It's his name. Well, this man, verse 2, is a chief tax collector. Palestine was split into three tax districts, and this man is the head of one of them. So he's a powerful man, he's an important official, which means his underlings would have called him Sir. And if you had official business with him, and he had the power to bankrupt you, I'm sure you'd call him Sir as well. But Jesus calls him Zacchaeus. What's more, being a chief tax collector, he would have been despised by his countrymen, the Jews. He's working for the occupiers, the Romans. He's therefore regarded as a traitor. And since with the full force of the law behind him, the tax collectors actually charged more than they should have done in order to line their own pockets to fleece the people, he would be regarded as a crook. As far as the Jews are concerned, this man is anti-God. He is anti-Israel. You get a flavor of their opinion in verse 7. He has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner. He's beyond the pale. So maybe to his face they called him Sir, but I'm sure behind his back they called him everything under the sun. But Jesus calls him Zacchaeus. When was the last time anyone called him by his name? And it's not just that. Names are personal. Of course they are. So if a complete stranger calls you by your first name, it grates a little, doesn't it? We're on first name terms with those who know us, those who are close to us, with our friends, with our family. The other month I was at a cafe with some of the family, tea, coffee, hot chocolate, slices of cake. And for some reason I assumed that Mandy had paid. And on my way out, a voice of a stranger rang across the cafe, Gerard! I thought, who's calling me Gerard? I don't recognize that name. It's not a... And it grated. But it was the cafe owner, because we hadn't paid. And I was on my way out the door. So quite right to call me back. Obviously, you've seen my name on the bill. Zacchaeus. It's the voice of a stranger. But here, nothing grates, does it? Nothing grates. You get the sense that Zacchaeus, when he hears himself called by his name, he feels safe, secure. In fact, he's thrilled that Jesus has picked him out, that Jesus seems to know him. In that crowded cafe where my name was called out, I was a rabbit in the headlights. Don't try to walk out without paying, but you feel with Zacchaeus, you almost feel he's been waiting all his life for that word, that voice, this man. They've never met before, and yet from his reaction, it's as though he's been waiting for that meeting. Nothing threatening. And it's not just that. Some may call you by your first name, but then to invite themselves to your house. Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your home. But no one ever stayed at the home of Zacchaeus. Or maybe they did. Maybe there were fellow tax collectors who went there, or people on official business or business contacts. But really, no one ever went to his house. Jesus isn't just on first name terms with him, but you get the sense he's a friend like no other. So you see, Jesus is passing through Jericho for the last time. Zacchaeus wants to see him. He can't. He's too short. Someone is always getting in the way. So he runs on ahead. And for a man in his position, he does something which is really quite humiliating. It's unexpected. Like a schoolboy, he shins up this sycamore tree to get a better view. He's in a good vantage point. Only then for Jesus to stop under that very tree and to look up and to look at him as though he's expected to see him there, as though he knows everything about him, and to say, Zacchaeus, hurry up, come on, what are you doing up there? Come down, I must stay at your home. From what Jesus says, you get the impression, found him, found the one I've been looking for. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. So on the remains, I just want to say three simple things. And the first thing is this: in what sense was Zacchaeus lost? Well, he's an outsider. He's not even a face in the crowd, really, is he? Verse 3, and he sought to see who Jesus was, but he could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. He's only little. And little people tend to get picked on, bullied. Little people tend to get ignored. Zacchaeus, the outsider. Maybe this is why, as a lad, what he lacked in popularity and height, he more than made up for by working hard and getting on in the world. He may not be liked, he may not be taken seriously, but if I do well, if I get on in the world, if I become somebody important, they'll have to take me seriously then. And maybe you can identify with that. Maybe you're an outsider. Maybe you feel you don't belong. But he's not an outsider with Jesus, is he? And if he's an outsider, he's an outsider with apparently few, if any, friends. Look at the crowd's reaction to him. So he made haste, verse 6, and came down and received Jesus joyfully. But when they saw it, they all complained. So they all know him, and nobody likes what they see. They all complain, saying he has gone to be the guest with a man who is a sinner. This man's universally despised. Nobody really knows him. No one really cares to get to know him. And when Jesus catches up with him, he's all alone. There's no one helping him to get a good view. He is on his own. He's the outsider. He's the lonely man. He's the friendless man. And maybe you can identify with that. Maybe there are times when you wonder, have I got any real friends? Maybe you wonder if anyone really cares. But Jesus cares. Jesus knows this man's name. And Jesus knows your name. By the end of that day, Zacchaeus has found the best and truest friend he ever had. And if he's the outsider, if he's the friendless outsider, you wonder if he ever felt loved. Somebody's phone is ticking away. Not to embarrass them. You wonder if he ever felt loved. I'm sure, because he's a rich man, there are people who protested their friendship. You know, that's a problem with rich people, isn't it? They don't know whether people are in love with them or in love with their money. Well, maybe you had lots of people who sort of pretended or protested their friendship, but there was no real friendship. What they actually liked was the fact he was a rich man, he might give some of it to them. Was this man ever loved? Maybe, again, you can identify with that. Maybe you wonder, have I ever really been loved? Does anyone ever care about me, really? Maybe there are people who you feel they care about you because they're supposed to care about you and they have to care about you. But actually underneath it, you think, well, I don't know really. Does anyone really love me? Does anyone really care about me? I was reading about Emma Louise, a woman who's been caught up in the sex industry. She wants out. She's met with some Christians. She was asked what her childhood was like. And she said, my childhood was rubbish, although she didn't quite use those words. She said, I was in and out of care. I never felt love. I never felt loved from my family much. I was lonely. I had no friends. The only person who ever loved me was my nan. The only person who ever loved me. Maybe you feel like that. You think, oh, does anyone love me? Is there anyone? But what Zacchaeus saw in Jesus that day changed everything. Perhaps the only person who had ever truly loved this man was Jesus. And that's why the mention of his name means so much to Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, hurry up, come down, for today I must stay at your house. And maybe there's one more thing about this this unloved, friendless outsider. As we're thinking about him being lost. There was no way out. He's stuck on a treadmill. He's risen to the top of his profession. Well, is that it? Maybe Zacchaeus thinks, well, I was expecting more. I was going to show them that you're going to have to take me seriously now. Well, I've risen to the top. I'm one of the most important officials in the whole of Palestine. I was expecting more. So where's the rest of it? Before I met Jesus, I used to keep a diary. And when I look back over it a few years after that, I kept writing this in my diary. Something's got to change. Something's got to change. Something's got to change. I can't go on like this. Something has got to change. Because I thought I'm living life. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm having fun, I think. That's what it is. But I get feeling about life. Where's the rest of life? Where's the rest of it? I was expecting more. And I can't find what it is I'm expecting. Where's the rest of life? And if this is really what my life is, I can't bear it. I can't bear to live like this. If this is all it will ever be. Maybe you can identify with that. You're on a treadmill. Where's the rest of life? What, this is it? Is this going to be like this all the way through? But on that day, something does change. Zacchaeus has changed. And he steps off that treadmill to a new life. Okay, so back to our question. In what sense was Zacchaeus lost? Well, he's the outsider. He's the lonely, friendless outsider. He's unloved. And there seems no way out until Jesus says, Zacchaeus. And maybe you can identify with that. You know, Sunday by Sunday, you're here. If you like, you're up your sycamore tree. You're there with your thoughts. Sometimes you tune in. Most of the time, you're tuned out. Sometimes you're curious. But you're up in your sycamore tree. You're watching. You're wondering. And tonight, Jesus, the truest, most loving friend anyone ever had, maybe tonight he stopped. And he stopped to speak to you. He knows your name. He knows all about you. And he stopped. He knows your name. because he wants to meet with you. Which is why on the subject of being lost, we're going to have to go a little bit deeper. You see, Zacchaeus is not just lost horizontally, you know, in terms of his relationships with others. He's this lonely, friendless outsider. There's a greater sense in which Zacchaeus is lost vertically, in terms of his relationship with God. Now, don't switch off, because really we're getting to the heart of things. Sometimes we have to look at ourselves in the eye. His relationship with God. Now, he's a Jew. Being a Jew, he would have known the two great commandments that God had given to his people, to the world. Not go to church and keep the rules, but the commandments of love. They're repeated in many places. I'm going to quote them from Mark's Gospel. You need to turn to it. Mark 12. These are the two great commandments. The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second, like it, is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The two great commands. Well, we think of Zacchaeus. Let's take the second commandment first. Did Zacchaeus love his neighbor as himself? Well, clearly not, because later he will say, in verse 8, Look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor. So he's obviously never done that before. He's a rich man. He's seen people in need, but he's always walked on by. He's not been bothered about his neighbor. He's never loved his neighbor as himself. He said, not my problem. And he goes on to say, And if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, by diddling them, I restore fourfold. So he's obviously taking from people what is rightfully theirs. He's not just simply walked on by when he's seen them in need. He's actually stolen from them. He's a tax collector. So he's obviously broken the second commandment. What about the first? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. Well, Zacchaeus is obviously a very clever and capable man. You don't get to be where you get without being that sort of man. But where did he get those gifts from? Where did he get his able, quick, agile mind from? He got it from the God who made him. In fact, all Zacchaeus has except his sin comes from God. And yet he's never given his heart to God. He's given his heart to money. All that he has to come from God, thank you very much, I'll spend it on myself. Heart, soul, body, mind and strength, I'll spend it on myself. So he's broken the first and the second commandment, the two great commandments. Zacchaeus is a rebel. And of course, if you are a lawbreaker, if you break commands, there's a price to pay. And the Bible says when you break God's commands, you're under a death sentence. The wages of sin is death. So Zacchaeus is walking a path upon which God's anger is to be found. That is how lost he is. But my friend, what of you? Don't switch off. Take that second commandment. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now think about that. Hand on heart. Being good is a real effort, isn't it? You know, being good, you can do it for a bit. But it's such an effort. You know, I see my neighbor in need, but I'm not bothered. I don't want to help. I actually don't care. I can shut my eyes to my neighbor in need. What have they ever done for me? Why should I ever help them? What about that first commandment? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. But if I'm honest, I've spent my heart, soul, mind and strength upon me. A brilliant mathematician was talking on the radio about her career. She's seen her equally talented mother give up her career for the children. So she's seen her mum, very gifted, very talented, give up her career so she could look after her. And when she looked at that, she thought, well, that's not for me. I'm never going to give up my career for anybody else. I'm too gifted. I'm too important. The gifts that I've got are to be celebrated. They're for me. I'm not going to waste them serving somebody else. They're for me. And you feel, well, that's a bit rich, isn't it, really? You know, a mother gave up her career for her. And her response is, I'm not giving up what I've got for anybody. It's for me. But you just take a step back from that. If you feel that's a bit rich, you think everything I have is from God. He's given me everything. God gives me everything. But I think, blow that. It's for me. What I have is to be celebrated. What I have is for me. He may have given me everything, but I'm not prepared to give him anything. Never crosses my mind to thank God for the gifts, the abilities, the blessings that I have. As far as I'm concerned, if they're special, I'll celebrate them. Look at me. And God is just a footnote. What I have isn't for him, for his pleasure. It's for me. And I'm excused from serving him. It's not for me. Heart, soul, mind and strength we spend on ourselves. So be honest. Look at yourself in the eye. All of us have broken those two great commandments, haven't we? Hand on heart, I don't love my neighbor. Hand on my heart, I don't love God. Suppose this room was a public gallery. And plastered all over the walls was a record of our lives, okay? Now, there'd be some things there to celebrate, wouldn't there? There'd be some things there I think, oh, I've got a big certificate. I hope somebody sees that. And you want people to see what you've done. But what about those other things? The things we keep locked away. The things you want no one to see. That if we walked in here tonight and we saw it all over the walls, we were putting our hands over it. You know, it's embarrassing enough, isn't it, when a mobile phone goes off. But what would I feel if all the shameful things were all plastered everywhere? Everyone could see them. I'm sure you know the story that's been in the papers the last few days. Group of Western tourists led up a mountain, high mountain in Malaysia. It's over 13,000 feet. And when they got to the top for a laugh, because it was apparently so cold, they decided to take all their clothes off. But the Malaysian authorities aren't laughing. It's regarded by some as a sacred mountain, and for this act of disrespect, as you'll know, some of the tourists have been arrested. And among them a 23-year-old graduate, Eleanor Hawkins, and she was until a day or so ago facing the possibility of 3 months in prison. And her face has been pasted all over the papers, and what she's done has been blasted across the world. It's all very public, isn't it? Doesn't seem so funny now. And what was witnessed only by a handful of people has now been told to millions. And to be honest, I feel a great deal of sympathy for her. It's dreadful, really, isn't it? It's the shame. It's the shame. This former head girl, straight A's, A levels, has had to make a very public apology and plead guilty. You see, what she thought was only seen by a handful of people, it's now been blazoned across everywhere. She's been found out. And what does she feel? She feels shame. All those things I would want to cover up. But one day, all that I ever did will be posted for everyone to see. Displayed to a watching universe. And on the day of judgment, all I will be able to say is guilty. My breaking of God's commands is never a private matter. It's never a secret amongst friends. God sees, God knows, God will hold me to account. And you know that, don't you? We all know that. We all feel shame. All of us have that sense that we're waiting to be found out. All of us have that sense, if you got to know the real me, You'd reject me. You wouldn't want to know me. Like Zacchaeus, I too am lost. I'm walking that path upon which God's anger is to be found. So point number two and point number three are both very brief. Point number two, seek. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Who is God? Who is this God that I've offended? Who is he? Look at verse 1. When Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, the secret's out. The guessing game is over. Who is this God that I've offended? We see his godness in the face of Jesus Christ. God has entered our world in the person of his Son. So Zacchaeus, the God you've offended is coming this way. The God you've wronged, with whom you're on a collision course, is coming this way. He ran ahead, climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, "This is the God you've wronged, Zacchaeus. Oh, you're in for it now. You can't escape the gaze of God. You're not going to get away with it." And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said, "Yes, what are you going to say? Zacchaeus, hurry up, come down, for today I must stay at your house." God, on first name terms, with a sinner, stretching out his hands in friendship. The day when everything changes. How can Jesus go back to this man's house? Everyone seems to agree, don't they? Verse 7. This man's gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner. My friend, I may be on a collision course with God. I may be lost. But his first thought, and you've heard it from this platform many, many times, his first thought is not to condemn you. He's not out to get you. When you feel the word getting into your mind and it's creeping and it's seeping through the pores and it's getting closer and closer, it's not because he's out to get you. And because he knows I would never really go looking for him, he comes seeking after me. And maybe Sunday evening by Sunday evening you're up that tree and you feel lost. And you're an outsider. Maybe you feel an outsider because you're in a Christian home and you're not a Christian. Maybe you feel you're unloved. People have to love you because, well, they have to. But you don't know whether they really love you. You wonder whether you've ever been wanted. And maybe more than that, you've really messed up. And you really don't want people to see the story of your life. You don't want people to see your picture gallery. Your hands will be all over it, covering it. Please don't look. Please don't look. You feel ashamed. You've got so much to hide. And Jesus comes seeking after you. And it's not so that you're going to get it now. In fact, he's actually stopped to speak to you tonight. He knows your name. And he knows your name like no other knows it. Because he knows you like no one else knows you. And that's why he can say your name like no other. He is the one person who understands you. He's the one person who knows you. He's the one person who sees you. And he's come this way this night because he wants to meet with you. And he wants you to come home. He wants the lost to be found. He wants the outsider to enter his circle of friends. And he wants the one who feels unloved to be embraced in his loving arms. And he stopped under your tree and he says, "You come down. So why don't you come down? Come down from your hiding speck. Zacchaeus couldn't believe it, could he? This Jesus wants to spend time with me. I'm sure if he hadn't said Zacchaeus, he would probably thought he's got the wrong person here. He's obviously looking for somebody else. But he wasn't looking for somebody else. But tonight he's not looking for somebody else. He's looking for you. You always think, well, it's for somebody else. It's for somebody else because I'm nothing. I'm nobody. No one ever stops for me. But he stopped for you. Why should you think it's strange that Jesus should want to spend time with you? So come down. So he made haste and came down and received him joyfully, because the lost is found. And so point number three. It's saved, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. That day Jesus goes home with Zacchaeus. What happens? Well, in one sense we don't know. It's not a fly on the wall documentary, is it? In another sense we do know. Because look at verse 8. Then Zacchaeus stood. In other words, he's going to make an announcement. When someone stands, it's a formal announcement. I've got something to say. So what does he say? Look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. That's extraordinary, isn't it? The man who is in love with his money says, I'm going to give half of it away for starters. The man who's defrauded others says, I'm going to right those wrongs. And I'm going to right those wrongs twice over, because normally you only give back about, you don't give back fourfold, you give back twice over. But he's saying, I'm going to go double the double. This change of heart's expensive, isn't it? Because it's more than a change of heart. This is a new heart, a new Zacchaeus. What's happened? Verse 9, Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house. What's happened is that day, Zacchaeus is saved. He's no longer under a death sentence. His sins have been forgiven. And with a new record in heaven, he has a new heart on earth. And he's finished with his sin, and he's come to Jesus. And it's no longer money that has his heart. It's Christ. And you can hear it in his very first words, can't you? Verse 8, he says, look, Lord. Lord, his life is no longer his own. Lord, it's yours. My money is no longer my own. It's yours. Now I belongs to you, and everything I have belongs to you. And when he gives himself to God and all that he has, he couldn't be happier. He won't be thinking of his life, where's the rest of it? There's supposed to be something more to life than this. Because he's found life. And that life is in Jesus Christ. Zacchaeus has been saved. Today salvation has come to this house because he also is a son of Abraham. A true child of Abraham, no longer cursed but blessed. No longer under a death sentence but ransomed, healed, restored, forgiven. That day Jesus went home to Zacchaeus' house. But he's a child of Abraham, so one day Zacchaeus will go home to Jesus' house. In heaven. My friend, what of you as we close? As an old African-American spiritual, sometimes I feel like a motherless child, a long way from home. You know that feeling? A long way from home. I'm lonely. I'm lost. I wonder, do I belong? I don't feel I belong anywhere. I'm a long way from home. Does anyone care about me? Do I have any real friends? Is there anyone who ever has loved me except because they feel they're supposed to love me? And maybe you feel you're stuck on a treadmill and I can't get off it. There's some inevitability. It's just carrying me on. If I could get off, I could, but I can't. Jesus tonight has stopped stopped under your tree. And he knows your name. And he speaks it like no one else. Because he knows you. Whatever anyone else calls you, he knows you. He sees you. And in the gospel tonight, he wears a smile. It's a warm, loving, wonderful smile. And in the gospel, he engages you eye to eye. He says, hurry up. Come on. Come down from your hiding speck. Come down. I want to go home with you tonight. This night I want you to be a Christian. This night I want you to be saved. This night I want to go home with you. No more you coming on a Sunday evening up your sycamore tree listening, then going home on your own. Tonight I want to go home with you. Tonight I want it to be different. Tonight I want things to change. So will you come down from your tree? Will you come to me? Says Jesus. Oh Lord, I am lost. Come and find me and save me and forgive me and make me yours. Come home with me. But Lord, there's a bigger sense in which I want to come home to you. Will you come home tonight? On that day, Jesus stood beneath a sycamore tree. On this day, Jesus asks you to stand beneath a very different tree. Jesus passed from Jericho to Jerusalem, where they nailed him to the tree, where he died the punishing death that sinners deserve to die, so that all who fall upon his kind arms, including you, can be forgiven. The lost can be found. You can be saved. Another Sunday? Hiding in the branches? Why shouldn't Jesus be looking for you tonight?